stuff that basically it's the family as that core unit that determines how our world is going to go. And you see that. I mean, you see that the family is what really forms us, not just religiously, but in every aspect of our lives. And I think in a special way, though, faith is passed on through the family. My very first memories as a child, I also speak not only as a member of the church, but also as somebody who was a member of the domestic church, still am. My earliest memories, though, many of them are learning my prayers, and are of, I remember in the hallway, my parents had sort of a chest of drawers, and on top of the chest of drawers was a picture of Jesus, a picture of Mary, a picture of Pope John Paul II, and also like my grandparents' son. So it was almost like they were part of the family. And so from a very early age, I was introduced to these figures, to Jesus and Mary and the Pope. And so those are very early formative moments for me. And so the most important thing with instilling the faith in a family, I think, is that first of all, we know and live the faith. You know, we can only give what we have. Paul VI, back in the 70s, had a great quote where he said, "Today the world listens to witnesses more than teachers. And if they listen to teachers, it is because they are witnesses." So in other words, if we can talk all day long, but if we're not living that life ourselves, it's not going to go very well. It's always interesting. I have sort of two different homilies that I give when I am presiding at a baptism. One for parents that I see all the time, and one for the first time I've ever met them is a baptism. Especially now that I've been here for a few months, sort of get an idea of who's coming to church and who's not. And I always give that quote then, because children, I think more so than adults, pick up on hypocrisy. They can see pretty clearly when something's being told to them that is not being lived out. And so the whole "do as I say, not as I do," I think we all know that doesn't really work. Because the children are always going to follow the example of what we do, not so much what we're saying. So our lives have to correspond with what we're teaching. And so that goes with the whole family. The whole family sort of has to be involved in that. And so I noticed that a big difference takes place when the entire family sort of has that tradition. And in a lot of cases, it's the complementarity. Because there is that complementarity between a husband and wife, between a man and a woman. Now, in a lot of situations, either the father isn't present, or he's not supportive of the faith, or he's not Catholic. And so it's impossible to have that within the family. But it's always important to have sort of that, I think, both aspects. Especially for guys. I think there's a tendency for guys to feel like, well, religion is something that my grandma and my mom do, and I did it when I was a kid, but now I'm sort of on my own. And if they don't see those male representatives who are also living the faith, it's very difficult. And I think it's the same for girls. I think girls want to see their father or another male role model who lives out that faith. That's why I think it's so great what we do at Fair Lady of Hope that Father Saunders has put into place, where we have, at the 10:30 Mass, we have men who are actually serving as the MCs. So the altar boys, and really everybody, can sort of look at those men and say, well, serving Mass, serving our Lord, is not just something for little kids. Look, here's these high school guys, college kids, and grown men. And I mean, like, men that they can look up to. Guys like Alfonso and Michael Shear. Guys like J.C. Arosa. These are all guys that are like solid, rock-solid guys who are then willing to put on a casket and surplice and serve on the altar. And so that really makes a difference, I think, for the whole parish. And so if we can expose our children to those sorts of men, I think that's a very impressive thing. And then equally important is for children to have peers who are also living out the faith and living the same struggles that they are. One of my main roles here at Our Lady of Hope is working with the youth group. And Father Shear is the one that really set it up the way it is now. And Father Shear did a great job because what he did was, it's not, in a lot of parishes, it's very activity heavy. You know, the kids are always going out and doing things as a group, which is fine. But it's not really the main purpose of a youth group. The purpose of a youth group is to learn about the faith and to have support from your peers. And so all we do is we meet at 7:30, We play basketball or something for about 30 minutes while everybody's showing up. From 8 until 9, we have some sort of solid catechesis or guest speaker, something that builds up their faith intellectually, spiritually. Once a month, we have confessions and adoration. And then, for the last hour, we have an open gym. We play different sports, and I've got a great group of faithful young adults who help with the youth group, and then I'm there. And everybody, they love that because 90% of what they're doing is talking to each other. A lot of them won't even play the sports. They'll be playing cards, they'll be sitting up on the bleachers, talking with each other about the faith. And so they have that support with each other, and they're all living the faith very well. They're all really solid kids. And that's an important thing. Father Shear set it up, though. Everyone was saying that when I took over, we were going to have a real drop. Because whenever you have a new youth minister take over, you always experience a drop in kids. And we actually have, in fact, we had a little bit of growth. Not because of anything I'm doing, but because Father Shear didn't make it about the personality. He made it about Jesus. He centered it around Christ. And so you can plug any priest into there. And what the kids are really there for is the support of their faith, to have that building up. And so that's why those peer relationships are so important within the life of faith, because that's what they're coming for. They're coming to meet with other peers who are having the same struggles of living out the faith that they are. And there's great ways to expose children to their Catholic peers. A great way, of course, is with the Catholic school. Because in a Catholic school, you know, like the one here, we have 99% Catholic Catholic students. Teachers are Catholic. There's religious art on the walls. There's religion every day. Religious books in the library, and they breathe Catholic air. It's just part of the life that they lead. And there's no real challenges. The challenges come from outside, and they go to the school and find out how to face those challenges. And they meet an entire group of Catholic students who are all on the same mission. Towards sanctity, and with teachers who are leading them on that journey. But I've seen great Catholic youth and young adults who went to public school or homeschool. It just takes a little more work in those cases. You just have to network with the right families so you have a group of peers who can build up the faith. And I see great families in this parish who do that every day. And also taking advantage of the youth group. We're getting the junior high youth group started up again. So that's starting in 7th or 8th grade. There's a built-in group of peers who, as the faith begins to get challenged, can respond to it. I think another important thing is to make the faith attractive. And I said this is one area where, my parents admit, it was a struggle for us because we were in the Archdiocese of New Orleans when I was in my formative years, and they were going through a very tough time. I mean, the apparatus for the faith there was very weak. We had a great parish, actually, but a lot of the religious educators, a lot of people who were coming in for the diocese to teach, CCD teachers, who were, quite frankly, heretics. I mean, it was really not even close to being Orthodox Catholic teaching. So my parents are very articulate, very educated people. They really took it on themselves to help battle this. They became leaders in the archdiocese, battling sort of who the archbishop was putting into the schools, and without his knowledge, really, and was able to get to the archbishop and have him change things in a positive way. But in the midst of all of that, the faith is really a daily battle. So I grew up sort of seeing the faith as sort of this militant thing, which sometimes it is. But I think we lost a lot of the joy of the faith, that it became sort of this constant battle with the powers that be, and you lose some of the joy, some of the what faith really is. Because faith, the reason for having faith at its core is to lead us to joy, to take us on the road to happiness. So that's such an important thing in the midst of, we talk about all these battles that the kids are having in their faith. Well, they're able to talk about that among themselves at the youth group. But really, it's not really worth much unless they also are having that fun, unless they see that the faith is full of joy. That's really what it is. And the battle with the world is just a consequence of our trying to bring the rest of the world into that joy. It's not a battle of one against another. It's really not a battle at all. It's a conviction in Christ that we try to draw people in. And finally, I would say, as far as the practical side, is to build traditions. The traditions, I think, are things that are really go with you. I'm the first to admit that in college and when I was working, just after college, I was not practicing the faith very well. And it wasn't really until I was about 25 years old that I came back to the practice of the faith. But I never really lost sight of the traditions and the things that were instilled in me at an early age. And I see that with a lot of kids, that they wander, but if they have that core, they come back. And so they have, especially the traditions that I remember about around Christmas and Easter, about Advent, Lent, the things that, so even when I wasn't really practicing the faith, I still went and got my ashes on Ash Wednesday. A lot of Catholics do that. You see it once a year at Ash Wednesday. Like there's something magic about the dirt. But, you know, just that, but it gets ingrained in you, and so you feel like you're missing out on something, and you are if you don't go. And so if you can keep that sort of pilot light alive, then it can really spark up at any time. Now here I am, priest, so it works. And so I'd like to just close by bringing up two examples that I think most of us fall into with family. The first is Zaylee and Louis, because they were the ones who really, from the get-go, established a very warm Catholic family, and their children all became saints. And I think we all know their story. They had, he was a watchmaker, she was a lace maker. They both thought they had religious vocations. So she went off to the sisters, was told that she didn't have a vocation to being a nun. He went off to the Carthusians, couldn't learn Latin, so they kicked him out. And they came back to Paris, or to Lisieux, and they met on a bridge and just sort of knew that they were both called to marry each other. And they did. And the story is actually very interesting because while they were both successful in their businesses, it was the lace that was making all of the money. And so Louis actually gave up his watchmaking business and supported his wife. So the wife was really the breadwinner. Zaylee was making most of the money in the family. He was sort of taking care of keeping the books and taking care of the kids. So it's a very modern story, sort of. So you have a role reversal, but what you would expect in 19th century France. But it's a beautiful thing that here was this family willing to do whatever it took in order to raise a family and then also to raise them Catholic. And so you have five sisters, all became saints, all became religious sisters. And if they're not saints yet, they're well on their way. The second is the example of St. Monica, St. Augustine. Because so many, I think, have children who are away from the faith. And that's where we have the example of St. Monica. St. Monica did what she could to raise St. Augustine Catholic, but he went very wayward. And, I mean, if you read his biography, it was all over the place, almost scandalous reading. And he went way off the beaten track. He was not practicing the faith at all. He was also living a morally dissolute life. He had a child out of wedlock and all types of things. Things that would have prevented him today from him from being a priest, but he was still able to become a bishop. Different times. But St. Monica never gave up. She always prayed. She always was just this example of the faith. So she didn't push it on him. You would find that St. Monica was, it never talks about how she was nagging him again about coming back to the faith, but she was that example. And she was available to talk to him about the faith when it would come up. And she prayed for him. And that's above all, prayed for him. And then, after he came back to the faith, she's the example of what an adult mother would do with an adult child who's within the faith. Because she supported his vocation. She did everything that she could to help him to maintain the faith and to remember back to his youth about the faith. But at the same time, was never overbearing. So St. Monica is a wonderful example. And these are for different stages. So St. Monica for a later stage, Zaylee and Louis as the early stage. And so if we truly see our homes not simply as a place where religion plays a part, but actually an integral reason for our family, then that life of grace will take hold, and we will be united on the last day. Thanks.
Church and pastor. applied to the domestic church,
Yeah, I think in one sense, I think that it's more, I think in the family, it's going to be more of a collaboration. In one sense, scripturally, I guess the father's the head of the family. But if we read St. Paul, you know, it's interesting because we often talk about, we have the part where it talks about why be submissive to your husbands, for the husband is the head of the family, as Christ is the head of the church. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. And it's often explained away as, well, you know, Christ, the woman is to be submissive, but the husband loves his wife so much that, you know, he would die for her so it all evens out. Well, not really. It's actually even deeper than that. Christ divested himself of any sort of honor. He actually humbled himself. So to love like Christ does means to submit to all. So really what you have is not so much the husband really loving the wife, but the wife submitting to him the whole time. It's rather they're submitting to each other under the leadership of Christ. And so I think that both the husband and the wife there is a complementarity there. They each have a charism. But there are oftentimes different areas in which they lead. You know, my dad certainly led in certain areas. So my dad was definitely more of the teacher in the family. And he sort of had a very innate ability to teach and to sort of lead sort of a lot of different aspects of the family. My mom controlled all the finances. My dad has no idea where any money comes or goes. He just makes it. And so my mom really led from an administrative standpoint, and she also led sort of the prayer life of the family, whereas my dad was more the catechist. So they both had this complementary, and sometimes it's the opposite way around, but I don't think there's any one place in which the father exerts control at the expense of the mother. It seems like, I think that it's always a complementary role. I think every couple is different as far as where each of them leads and how they come to that. Oh yeah, well in that sense, I think definitely there's that protective element that a pastor has, you know, that he's responsible at the end of the day for the souls within that house or within this parish called Sunday School.
I come from an era where ghosts
have been Yeah, no, leading by example. Absolutely. Yeah, the father's not doing it. He just says go to church. It's gonna be a more difficult to instill the faith. Well, you know, oh, yes, please.
So when you don't have the father figure, so, you know, that's one of the reasons I homeschool, because there's one less influence out there. And then bring up to, like, Regina Mary and just, you know, faithful music and choir director and Regina Mary. Because it's very hard to get them around other men who are very faithful. And so that is probably my biggest challenge. And keeping them from going to church, being unfaithful, keep bringing them to church.
And I think that's what, Father Simon's done a great job providing those outlets. I mean, not every parish has. I mean, I think most parishes in our diocese thankfully have good outlets for kids to be in touch with men and women of faith and their peers who are faithful. Our Lady of Hope is especially strong in that area. We have a lot to offer almost every age person and every state. Well, if any other questions come up, you know where to find me in the other room. But it was great being here. It was a real honor to speak with you all. And know if my prayers please keep me.